Hello and welcome to Tribe Tech in association with Stephen Scone. I'm Fayaz Khan and I'm here with my husband, Robert Hillier.
Hello, and tonight we're at the first ever Tech Southwest Awards at the Mercure Hotel, right in the heart of Devon's county town, Exeter.
It's been glitzy, it's been glam, it's been gorgeous, lots of laughter.
And a really inclusive feel. And although obviously it's a serious business, it's not been taking itself...
It's not been taking itself too seriously.
Not too seriously, you know, a real sense of fun through the evening. It has, though, been very busy and at times really noisy, so we couldn't get everyone we spoke to on the podcast.
No, and also there was enough space as well, so that was another problem.
But everybody we spoke to has been amazing and fascinating, and we'll get round to visiting as many of the winners we can in person.
Yeah, it would be really good to go out and see all these people in their various areas of work, because it's all over the region, like Bournemouth, Gloucester, Cornwall. It'll be wonderful.
A Tech Southwest podcast, Tribe Tech.
So we started with Vicky and Toby, who were the evening's presenters, but just to introduce them properly, because they're a little bit more than just your hosts, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Vicky Hunter was from Tech Nation. She's an entrepreneur engagement manager, or an EEM. There's 11 of them in Tech Nation across the country, and they're basically resources for startup founders. They connect them, they help them network, they offer them programs if they need them. They're just
connector for startups is how she referred to herself. And the other host is Toby Parkins, a man of numerous hats. He's known as the man behind Head Forwards. He's the co-founder of Head Forwards, that outsources software development, one of the best known software companies in Cornwall, I would think. And also, he started an amazing development conference in Cornwall called Agile on the Beach. And you like that, don't you?
I love Agile on the Beach. They occasionally have beach parties at Gidding Bays Beach, which is one of my favourite beaches in Cornwall. It's in Falmouth.
That's in Falmouth, a beach we know extremely well. So let's hear from them.
So I moved to the Southwest in January, and my job covers the whole of Southwest, so I really focused on trying to get to know as many people as possible. I'm based in Bristol, so I really have been just trying to meet all of the kind of key players across the region that are supporting tech startups. And Tech Southwest and their steering committee was obviously an amazing resource for me. We got to know Dan Pritchard.
He's the head honcho.
Yeah, he is the like magician behind this evening. And actually, he was on a panel for a Tech Nation event that I ran earlier this year, in like June, July time. So I think this was him getting his own back.
Yeah. What do you do day to day?
What's my day-to-day job?
Yeah.
There's no day that's the same. So I really have to sort of know everybody and everything that's going on in tech, which is a mammoth task. How do I do that? There's obviously a lot of kind of emails and stuff that go on, so it's a fairly boring and glamorous side. But I do get to go to a lot of events. I try and travel around the region as much as possible without completely burning out, occasionally seeing my fiancé.
Where were you before you moved to the Southwest to do this?
Yeah. Before you became an EEM.
Before I became an EEM. So I was living sort of temporarily in Italy and traveling a lot. My partner is—he's a tech founder, so he can work from anywhere.
Toby, come and join us.
Come
and join us. The other host for the evening.
Yeah, so we've just been joined by Toby Parkins.
Yep.
We're just asking Vicky about how she came to the Southwest and what she was doing before.
I guess the short answer, which is probably a better answer, is that I used to live and work in London as part of the tech scene there. Lots of community stuff, again, meeting loads and loads of founders every day, running events and just connecting people and all that kind of stuff. Then I kind of went off the radar for a few years, went travelling, lived in Italy, and then I came back to the UK and I said, where do I want to live? Where do I want to put down roots? And the answer was not London. I'm not from London, although everyone says my accent sounds like I am. I'm actually from the Northeast.
You certainly can't tell that.
No, I know. Proud Geordie, so... But yeah, we thought, where do we want to go? Where do we want to think about setting up home and maybe having a family one day? And we chose Bristol.
So did you know before you moved to the Southwest that people like Toby and his company were down here? Was it a surprise when you started to meet people?
It was a very pleasant surprise.
If I could sort of say global, certainly UK leaders in your field, did you think you'd find that kind of...
I had no idea what to expect. I moved here on the third day of the job, so it was kind of packed a suitcase. flew to London, we did 2 days of induction, day three I moved to Bristol, still with a suitcase, and I did the first month of the job without a house, without anywhere to live, we were just staying in Airbnb.
That is brave.
So this is all obviously part of the startup founder ethos, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're living it like that. You don't need an office, you don't need a car, don't need a bed.
Occasionally it's nice somewhere.
You just need your laptop and your phone and off you go. Proper immersion though, wasn't it, into I suppose. You had nothing to worry about apart from the job. You're not bothered about what your curtains look like. You don't have any curtains. You're just straight in.
Well, I mean, it's just like real life, actually. I mean, this month, I've just...
Well, my life is actually like real life. That's good to know.
No, as in, you know, like, you made that point about, you know, that's what running tech companies, startups, is all about. I mean, you normally have to travel to go and meet people and go to events. And this month, I could probably count on one hand, like, how many times I've actually been at home. You know, it's just been...
It becomes a metric. How many times have you slept in your own bed?
Yeah. Not many. You know,
Well, Tommy, tell us a little bit about you, because you run Head Forward. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
I founded Head Forward with Craig about 9 years ago. I was already doing some work with a big Japanese company, NTT, one of the top three telecoms companies globally. They said, look, could you set up a team of developers for us? Craig and I had already been talking about this idea, other co-founding director, so Craig Gervin. Yeah, we talked about the idea of setting up an outsourced software company based in Cornwall, and of course all we needed really was a customer, and then the customer came along, and so we actually sat down and co-created the whole business model with NTT. They identified all the things they didn't like about outsourcing, some of the impediments that stop it being really effective, for focusing around knowledge retention and having the right inspired, named, dedicated developers, dedicated teams. And so essentially we built the business model with them. It's a very transparent costing as well. So we have transparency about salaries. So as a result of that, I think because it's different from a lot of the other outsourcing companies, that model, and because it was built exactly around what a customer wanted, it has allowed us to scale reasonably quickly. You know, so we're about 110, although we've just signed some more contracts. So we're going to be sort of coming on for 120 people in the next few months.
That's amazing, because you wouldn't expect that in Cornwall. Like, where do you find these people?
Well, so because what I would say about that, though, is actually you could be anywhere, couldn't you? But actually Cornwall forms a bit of the identity of the company, doesn't it?
It does, in some ways. It's about quality of life, really. So it's one of the key challenges that all companies have globally is just actually holding on to staff. You know, staff turnover and churn is. That means that the knowledge that's in the people's heads is like walking out the door. Yeah. You know, and there's lots of, you know, I meet companies where 100% of their staff leave within 12 months. We're below 10%.
How do you keep that then?
Well, the most important thing is that you have to try and look after people as much as possible. You need to motivate them with, it's not just a quality of life thing, but it's actually, I think, having professional development, really making sure that you're pushing the boundaries of what's possible technology-wise. Because most software developers are aware that things are changing all the time. New technologies, you know, we're building one of our largest projects, and we started off building using Backbone, Marionette, JavaScript frameworks, and everyone looks at you now and goes, well, why are you not using React? And it's like, well, React didn't exist when we started building the project. You know, that sort of fast-changing world means that people want to be learning new approaches and things, and that's part of the reason why I set up Agile Beach as well.
Have you found that, Vicky, ethos in the Southwest is different to elsewhere?
I mean, I can only compare it to London, which I am loath to do. Often, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, in London, everybody's an entrepreneur, everyone has the next best idea, and then when you start asking them about their business, they've not actually built anything yet. The approach there is, you know...
Overconfidence.
Yeah, massively, like, super confident, sell it, and it works. It works with, like, a lot of companies. They come up with a good idea, they talk about it, and therefore it goes large for whatever reason. The contrast that I found in the Southwest is that there's a lot more substance and a lot more humbleness, which I think is a bit of a barrier. And I think part of what I'm trying to achieve, and I hear this in conversations that I have in steering committee meetings, that kind of thing, is we need to build that confidence through storytelling. We need to shout about how great all of the things that are happening down here are, because the more visibility those companies have and the amazing things they're doing, then more people in the area will want to become entrepreneurs or will want to work in the tech industry.
Well, just judging from these awards, there are some incredible companies here. I mean, it's incredible that we have all of this in the Southwest. It can be this enormous help, but then what's stopping people from shouting about it?
And what do you think, Toby, as well? Is that something else that you find that people are not maybe as front foot about what they've got as they might be elsewhere in the country?
There's probably fewer places to talk about stuff. You know, there are the sort of local clusters across the region. You know, people sometimes just like to get on and do it. The audience isn't quite so large. So, you know, if you go to your local pub, you know, you go to a bar in London.
There's a bar in Shoreditch. Anyone will listen to you talking everyone's about your latest app.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's just like you know, you can probably recruit developers.
Every single night. It's to do with critical mass, really. Like, the reason I loved London when I was 24 was because I moved to London and within a week I had a million new best friends because everybody needed new best friends because everybody had just arrived.
Yeah.
It's a big, big melting pot. That is, you know, one of the world's biggest capital cities. It's to be expected. People move to the Southwest for a better lifestyle, for you know, more work-life balance, for more access to the countryside, for a slightly slower pace of life. And therefore, there are fewer events, the cities are slightly smaller. Like, it's just a different pace, I think. And I think that's maybe what you mean.
In some ways. Like, but I think there's...
If you wanted to talk about your startup every night of the week in London, you could. If you tried to do that, even in the bigger cities in the Southwest...
You can do it every night.
You'd have a reputation as being a real ball.
Does that matter, then? I mean, is that... You know, if you say London is full of people talking but not doing, does it matter if there isn't an event every day? Is this something that needs to be changed?
What does happen, though, is when events happen, they are kind of really well attended.
Yeah,
and there's a smaller quantity of events, but they do still happen periodically every month. There's several events every month, and that means that people do come to that. And the interesting thing about the distance between where people live and the event is normally greater than London. But of course, the travel time actually quite often isn't.
Yeah.
You know, in London, it quite often takes you like an hour, hour and a half to get home.
Unless you're coming into Central Exeter, in which case it does take an hour and a half.
I mean, so actually, you can go to a local cluster and travel, you know, less than an hour. It's, well, pretty much anywhere in the region.
That shows that's why events like this are quite important. And also, I suppose, Tech Southwest as an umbrella organisation is so important because it brings all of these people together. I mean, there's people from Cornwall here, Somerset, Bristol.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. That's why I wanted to get involved. There's real power in a region that recognises that it has challenges around travel or, you know, rural areas or whatever it is, actually being organised and getting together and saying, how can we learn from each other's successes and from each other's failures? How can we share ideas and have a voice that is stronger together? And I know that Tech Southwest as an organisation is envied by other regions across the country who go, I wish that we were that organised in our region.
Because
we talk about collaboration all the time in the Southwest, but we're not just talking that talk, we are walking that walk. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the concerns that I heard quite frequently from each of the local clusters, actually, when Tech Southwest was being set up, was that, oh, no, they're going to try and, you know, steal our thunder, or they're going to try and compete with us and all this sort of stuff. And I said, no, that's not the way it should be. And providing that Tech Southwest is complementary to the local clusters, and actually what we've done this year in particular is we've actually invited representatives from each of the clusters actually onto the steering group so that everyone gets a chance to tell everyone else what's happening in their area. Then you get these discussions and sharing of ideas, and people talk about, oh, we're doing this latest event, and then someone says, oh, can I talk to you about that afterwards? We'd like to do something like that. And so that you get this real collaboration and sharing. People need to work together, and we have actually managed to do that.
We do often hear people will say that there needs to be some kind of formal Southwest powerhouse organisation. But are you saying that that's happening anyway without having it imposed by central government? The fact that it's not called a thing doesn't mean that it isn't happening.
It is happening. So the government have actually asked for this to happen across all of the regions of the UK, and it's been left up to the regions to self-organise themselves. So actually what's happening is you got the Western Gateway, was actually announced just before the election was announced. Kind of got
lost in the noise,
in the media. But so, and the Great Southwest has been putting itself together for 2-3 years now, I think, and it's there's prospectus now. I think it was taken to Downing Street, and you know, I actually sit on the Great Southwest Steering Group as well to try and tie in, you know, some of the work and messaging that Tech Southwest is doing, so that we can feed in some of the calls that, you know, businesses are looking to ask to enable them to grow. So it's starting to happen.
You're listening to Tribe Tech.
They were great hosts, weren't they?
Yes, they were excellent. And Toby, of course, if you don't know him, is well known, if not famous, possibly, for his relaxed style of dress. And he started in a black tie.
And he ended up with Hawaiian shirts, didn't he?
Before too long, normal service was resumed, yes. That made us all feel much more comfortable.
Well, I didn't know him, but I think you'd met him before, and it was quite interesting that he actually had to buy shoes for the event, which I found hilarious. I loved speaking to Alex Rowland, by the way. He was one of the individuals who won an award of the night.
Yeah, so biggest cheer of the night, possibly, as well. He won the award for contribution to the community, working with individuals, many of whom have got special needs, and making tech that exists work for them.
I spent about 12 years as a social services support worker. I rose all the way to the dizzy heights of community care assistant. Then my manager at the time decided that the size of my earrings was obviously impacting my ability to work. So doing what any good social media person would do, I wrote my resignation on a giant cardboard fluorescent earring, which matches the spiral on my earring, put it on Facebook, got about 300,000 likes, and kind of like made inclusion policy and stuff look rather silly, seeing how I was being discriminated against my appearance, and yet the guys I support are often discriminated against because, surprisingly, their appearance.
And just to explain, you've got two rather wonderful spiral earrings in. One's a kind of lime green, yeah. One's purple. You've got a very fetching eyebrow piercing. You've got hair that I can only dream of having. Full dreadlocks topped off by some fantastic blonde hair.
You look
absolutely amazing.
Well, I mean, the waistcoat tie combo is amazing as well.
I don't really know what goes on with my hair. That's down to my lovely partner, Becky. But kind of my mission, really, is to use technology to help people with learning disabilities have basically a level playing field. We don't use specialist technology as such, because the whole idea is that we want to use technology that everyone can get hold of. And with smartphones, that means things like we use things like Find My Friends apps, so I can help people learn to use the bus while keeping them safe. So I can see where they are, but they're perfectly safe on the bus. And I can see
stuff that's already existing.
Yeah, totally. Our whole thing is we don't want to suggest tech for people that people then go, oh, well, it's nice, but it's like $3,500. We use smartphones, we use apps. I'm currently doing some work with some lovely guys from Exeter who developed an app called Brain in Hand, which is a specialist autism app, which helps people with managed anxiety and daily routines and things. So kind of, yeah, we're all about just helping the guys to get the best use out of that technology, learning how to use it successfully.
And how do you get these people to come to you? How do they?
So I'm very lucky. I'm what they call a care micro provider. So I'm a small independent care worker. I'm self-employed by the guys. A lot of the guys have their own budgets now, so they have like personal independence payments, things like that. They will buy me in to do bits of work with them. So I do everything from like, you know, this weekend I was at the cinema watching Frozen 2, but I also do all the stuff like banking and helping the guys, but also stuff I really enjoy, like the technology tricks. So kind of I really get brought in to do technology, and then people say, oh, well, could you help me with the banking? Or I want to go to this event. I want to go to Comic Con.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Alex.
Pleasure.
Lovely talking to you, and congratulations.
Thank you very much indeed, guys.
Tribe Tech.
My name is Robert Wiltshire. I work for Software Cornwall, and my role is in the education outreach. And I go around all the schools in Cornwall, telling the students about the technology industry on their doorstep.
Tell us about the award you've won.
Well, the award is for the Best in Education Initiative, which is fantastic because we're reaching out to all the students, and they particularly highlighted our Mission to Mars, which is our week-long work experience, which we run about 3 times a year at least. It gives us the opportunity for 30 students at a time to experience what it's like to work and be a software developer.
I love one of the things Software Cornwall does is the tech jams and the fact that everyone can attend, anyone can attend, and it really helps people learn about a world that they otherwise wouldn't have known, you know, learning to code, learning to use Raspberry Pis, just learning to be in this sector.
Well, it's for everyone because we have youngsters as young as five, probably being brought along by the parents, who have a go. And because of my role in education outreach, I also go to jobs fairs in job centres. And we've actually had, through talking to people there, I've actually had, you know, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds coming in to the tech jams as well and having a go at coding for the first time as well.
Wow.
So it's literally anyone who can do it. There are tech jams, and we primarily aim it at children. Anyone is welcome to come along, and we do. It's always good to see them. And I only joined the tech jams doing this kind of stuff myself when I was 50.
That was Software Cornwall's Robert Wiltshire, who himself only started coding at the age of 50.
And now he's leading the education initiative. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
And he didn't seem much older than 50 either, so he learned.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He seemed pretty young.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. We should find out.
Yeah.
Google it.
Must be his moisturiser.
We should ask him what he uses. We also spoke to Linda Page, who's the CEO of PyroCore, and they won the Sustainable Tech Award. This company is incredible.
Well, it's proper sci-fi stuff, isn't it? I mean, she mentions Star Trek during the interview and the phaser and shooting waste with technology which is unfathomable, I think, to most of us, but it turns waste back into what it was originally, and then it means you can use it again, which has so many applications. And I think she talks about only a few of them, because when you start thinking about what this can be used for, there's almost no end of.
Well, I thought it was interesting that they reuse it for energy, which is really good. I mean, you get waste, instead of filling a landfill, you put it back into its elemental form, and then you use it for energy.
It's definitely one I want to go and have a look at in person. So we heard from Linda, and her marketing manager, Rhiannon Thomas, was there as well.
From what I can tell in 10 seconds, take waste and turn it into energy. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it's quite a bit more than that.
So tell me.
So we go beyond that process. We're looking to recover product, because every waste has product within it. So we're much more dynamic than that, more profound in terms of a process.
Okay, so give me an example of how that process works and an application that I can envisage.
In layperson's language.
That's me, yeah.
I got that one.
In 10 seconds.
10 seconds. So if you take any organic matter and you expose that organic matter in the absence of oxygen to elevated heat, the molecules will disassociate. So everything will go back to its elemental self. And I liken that to the old Star Trek movies where they come along with the guns and taser and you fizz the old Cyclops or whatever, they go take you out with a phaser, and you're a little whistle of smoke and a little pile of carbon. That's pretty much pyrolysis. What's clever about what we do is we keep those elements and then we reuse them and we repurpose them, either in the form of energy or steam or heat.
And you're based in Bristol?
Just outside Bristol.
And who are you working with? Who's taking advantage of the work that you're doing?
Our biggest client is Her Majesty's Royal Navy, and we are present on both of the new super duper expensive plus aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's really exciting for not only us but also like most of the United Kingdom. Like, it's something that everyone is very, very excited about.
So are they being powered by this?
No, it's not. The Royal Navy position is slightly different. The brief there was reduction of waste and render the waste inert, which of course the elevated temperature process does. This allows the naval vessels to stay at sea.
Because it was sea for such a long time, yes. So how they use their waste effectively. Okay.
And the issue with a lot of the sea vessels is alongside also the cruise liners as well. That the only issue that they need with their waste is to come back to port to offload. So that our pyrolysis technology allows them to actually stay out of sea longer. So it's much more efficient for them. It's much greener. It's much cleaner as well.
And so were you aware of this application when you started putting this business together? Or, well, have things emerged that have surprised you in terms of
Linda's point of view was always kind of a more cleaner way to manage waste. That was kind of the aim at the beginning, and that was the reason behind Pyrocore. We wanted to allow, so not only deployable to kind of disaster zones, to islands and isolated communities, those areas where waste is such an issue, and it's somewhere where, you know, there's no way for them to get rid of it. Then they're not in a place where they can sort the waste. It's not going to be able to be taken away by a biffer or a virgin.
Name drop a bit.
Well, of course, it's a difficult subject for those communities.
So how significantly can this impact and change the lives of people in
Oh, it's profound. Absolutely profound. We're not the entire solution, but we are potentially a large pebble. I always liken us to, if you throw us into a mill pond, you know, the pebble and the ripples roll out. That's kind of the potential dynamic of this technology. Now, I mean, I've been in sustainable technologies and developing and testing and challenging sustainable technologies for 15 years. And this is the only one I've bet my house on, literally. Come down to Wells, see the unit. She's now demarinized and she's deployable in 5 containers into any disaster zone.
Wow.
Into any isolated community in the world.
So that's an invitation which I think we intend to take up.
Yep.
Another award, which was fascinating, and again, one of those things where we looked at each other and went, this is happening just down the road from
on
us.
On our doorstep.
Yeah,
what?
Well, the winners of the Tech Research Award, FabSoil, they from the University of Plymouth, and their research is taking waste and making functional soil out of it, so soil in which you can actually grow food.
It's incredible because, you know, now with soil degradation, it's worse in our history.
Nitrogen depletion, all of that, of course. Yeah.
Just horrendous. And for them to be able to do this out of existing waste material, they're testing it at the Eden Project, aren't they?
Yes, because one of the aspects of this which they spoke about was that they use waste product in whatever locality they're working in. So if they were in sub-Saharan Africa or if they were in South America, they would use the waste from there to turn it into soil.
For that area. It's a bit like bees and honey. Did you hear that thing about if you have honey from the area you're in, you're less likely to get blue? Is that a thing? Have you heard that before?
Well, let's just say that it is. Because it sounds good.
Well, I think it's true.
So they won the Tech Research Award, and then we also had Falmouth Launchpad, who won the People's Choice Award. That was voted for on the night.
Yes, so we spoke to Ben Sewell. He didn't know that they'd won the award because we spoke to him before, and we didn't know.
We're an incubator and accelerator that's based at Falmouth University. What that means is we create new software companies. In essence, that's what an incubator does. We bring teams together, teams of people who want to start a new business, and we give them opportunities and challenges to pursue. They spend a few months looking at different opportunities, and they'll be looking at these with the help of their industry partners. So we bring in industry partners, people like the BBC, people like Amazon, bringing mining companies and banking companies, all sorts really. They spend a few months pursuing these challenges from these partners and then decide on one and spend the rest of the year building a business and a product to meet the need and opportunity that these partners present.
So there's a market gap. These partners come up to your incubating companies and say, we have this gap, you need to fill it. And then your companies design something to help them fill that gap.
Exactly, yeah.
I noticed that you also hand out master's degrees.
Yeah.
You also give them some money tax-free?
Yeah, so we do. We provide a lot of support. I'd say we're one of the highest support incubators and accelerators that's out there, because we provide altogether a two-year program. We do training with a master's in entrepreneurship. We do regular coaching and reviews all the way through. We pay them £16,000 tax-free for the first year of them being with us. So what we'd like to do is, it does take out some of the risk for people who perhaps wouldn't otherwise be able to take that risk, but nonetheless have really strong entrepreneurial potential.
So with them, I think it's 80%, isn't it, of startups fail within the first 12 months.
How does
working with those industry partners and having an identified market, how does that change the success of those companies?
Well, in the startup world, you often hear the what's your unfair advantage? And really, our industry partners provide that unfair advantage to our companies, because they provide expertise, but importantly, they also provide networks. Sometimes they'll be the first customer, and sometimes they'll help them into their supply chain. So, for example, one of our startups, Codices, was working with Twitch as their industry partner, and they were able to get support from them and help to get onto the store, the Twitch extensions, and be able to allow Twitch broadcasters to present quiz shows to hundreds of thousands of players at the same time.
We should say Twitch is Amazon's playground platform, really, where you can have your own game show and
exactly.
Post it live.
Yeah, so Twitch is normally used by people like video gamers and others to sort of live stream their games. But there's more and more hosts who want to produce their own content, even things like chat shows and all the rest of it. But Codices in particular helps them to host quiz shows.
And you've been nominated for an award tonight. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's been great. We were nominated for the People's Choice Awards, which is really hopefully a testament to the fact that we're having a real impact on the tech community in Cornwall and the South West more generally.
Ben, thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to you, and good luck tonight.
Thank you.
That's a good little initiative, isn't it? Based in the heart of Cornwall. I work with them quite a bit, so maybe I'm a bit biased. Can you remember some of the other awards of the night?
I can, because I wrote them down. The commitment to diversity, that went to Exist. They're helping communities in East Devon get into tech. You can also remember them by reading what I wrote down.
The other one was tech leadership. Elixel won that. Is that how you say it, Elixel?
Elixel, yeah. The Cluster Award went to Digital Plymouth.
They were great to talk to. You really loved them.
I like
you?
Them. I like them a lot, yeah. My hometown.
It's a pity we couldn't include them this time, but definitely one for a future podcast.
I'm going to go down and spend the day, yeah. Hang out there and see what they're up to.
The International Award was won by De Gould, who also took Tech Company of the Year under £5 million. You love that guy. The CEO was Ed Jones. You two couldn't stop talking.
Well, I want to go and have a look at that as well, because I couldn't almost, again, imagine how that technology works without seeing it. But it's using imaging to check for damage to vehicles. So that's obviously normally done by human eye. And this is replaced
with AI
that skill.
Yeah, they use AI to do that, don't they? And then the other incredible, we spoke to TDK Lambda, who are actual TDK, the inventors or creators of the cassette tape.
Yeah, well, certainly for people of a certain age, I mean,
I know what a cassette is, for goodness sake.
But do you know that TDK were the Apple of the cassette world in the 80s?
No, I didn't know that. But of course, I know it. I've used TDK cassettes in my life.
Okay. Well, TDK Lambda are based in Ilfracombe in North Devon, and they're making industrial power supplies. And they won the Tech Company of the Year over £5 million.
So if we couldn't get to you, we are extremely sorry, but we will definitely try and get to you on a future podcast. If you want to be on our podcast, speak to Tech Southwest and let us know. We'll be there.
You're listening to the Tribe Tech Podcast.
One of the awards was won by Blue Fruit Software. Do you remember that? That was Best Tech Workplace.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
In Red Roof, they were.
I love their ethos. They seem to really focus on how to make the workplace better for the people they employ. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but the tech sector can seem pretty difficult as a place to work. You can't, like, shut off.
Well, one of the things that Toby was mentioning at the start, wasn't it, was that some companies have a 100% churn of staff.
Every
12 months, and so retention is as important as recruitment. So that's what they focused on, and that was obviously working well for them.
It must be really hard as well, because, you know, it's so project-based, so deadline-based, that you can't... All you've got to do is turn your computer off, and that's actually quite a difficult thing to do, because if you're just at home thinking about your project, you probably just want to work 24 hours. It can't be easy.
Well, if you're working in a startup, then you would never switch off, literally.
Yeah, and I think that ties in quite well with Dave and Nigel, who I spoke to from People Matters Limited, because they've created this app that does, well, just that, helps you.
Yes, the a Fitbit for mental health.
Yeah,
they describe it.
I'm Nigel Winchett, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of People Matter Technology Limited.
I am Dave McRubby, and I am General Tech Strategy Dog's Body for People Matter. I'm involved in the tech side and the strategy side, and kind of blending that together as part of the startup and starting to build teams.
So you guys have been nominated for an award tonight.
Yeah.
What do you do?
So we have been nominated for Startup of the Year in Southwest, which is a huge honour. And we are a mental health technology company. So we do something that's a little bit unique. We use what we call your digital self, and we play that back to you to give you an understanding of your burnout risk.
So what does that mean? Like, how?
So we do that. So we have an app called Akina, and the app takes input from your email and calendar data, for example, and it looks for patterns, and we fit that to our own model that we've built that's based on established theories for burnout. And
okay.
We fit that data to the model, and we also take information from the app that you give us, and we create a score, and that score changes every day. And the idea is that score is completely private to you. It's your own personal private insight, and you can basically understand why that score is changing over time.
So it's like, okay, you have too many meetings in the mornings, and you never ever take any breaks, and you probably never have any lunch. And
it's what's normal for you. So the system learns what's normal for you. So if you always do mornings in the meeting, if you always do morning meetings, and you always have lots of clashing calendar appointments, then if that changes, then the system, that's interesting. So it's not about absolute values necessarily. It's about what's normal for you.
So it's not preachy.
No,
not preachy at all. It's a friend. It's a companion. It's almost like a mirror. It's this analogy doesn't work for everything, but it's a little bit like a Fitbit, but for mental health.
So when you say burnout,
yeah,
that's a kind of word that we used to use for mental health problems before we talked about them as openly as we do now.
Yeah.
So what does burnout mean in the context that you're working?
So there's some fairly well-defined academic definitions of burnout, and the opposite of burnout is flow. So we're interested in, if you strip away the language, are you working in a way that's best for you? Are you working in a way that best suits your personality? So it's giving you more insight into how your environment is affecting you, and then providing hints and tips and tools for you to be able to work in a way that works best for you.
What's your involvement, Dave?
I try my best to take the brains, which is Nigel and his co-founder Amy, who's a psychologist and who has developed the theory and the modelling, and turn it into something real. And the way I look at it is kind of are the anti-Facebook and Google and Amazon, because they take your data and use it to sell you more stuff, so they exploit your vulnerabilities. We take the same type of interaction, the same type of data, and we make you aware of your vulnerabilities, so I'll give you some support in making that happen.
Well, how do you guys do it? Do you go into companies?
That's a really good point. Yeah. So our first 18 months of real selling is going to be B2B. We have a first customer, which is Experian. There is absolutely a need for this in companies of all sizes. And it's sold as an employee benefit almost. So it's something that the Experian provide to you. If you want to use it, you can. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to. And the insight that's generated, your specific score over time, is your score. No one else sees that. Your manager doesn't see it. If you want to share it with your manager and your teammates, you can, but that's your choice. What we can also provide is sort of macro level data on trends and cultural insights. So, but what's interesting is that data is based on ground truth data about your digital selves.
But how does it help if you're not letting, if you're not telling your manager what's going on and that you might be at risk of burnout or whatever? How is that helping you?
Well, because presumably you can. I mean, because the risk would be as if the manager came to you and said, "I've checked your data today and I'm worried about you."
So what we're always trading off is the trust, the privacy. You want it to be something that you don't feel it's there's someone spying on you. It's your data to be used for your benefit. But if the system does spot things that are concerning, then we flag that to you. We say that we make you available of the resources that are available to you from within your company. But we're looking, sort of thinking at the moment about how we can, what escalation routes might be for that. So it may be that there's big companies like Experian have employee assistance programs and counselling services, and
so there may be
a layer that we can highlight things to that isn't your boss, but is someone that again with your approval. So when you sign up, you might say, if we see something that's concerning, would you be okay if we just let this service know, just so that someone can get in touch and give you some support. I mean, it's ultimately about giving people support.
So if you think about the traditional staff survey and how lengthy and cumbersome, and I think often for employees irritating it can be, because you haven't asked me about the thing that's, and the thing I actually do want to talk to you about, apart from do you have anything else you want to say?
Yeah.
All companies want to be much more data driven. But the fear, isn't it, around that has always been that you are being purely turned into a piece of data.
Yep.
This takes away, does that this really humanizes that aspect of just being looked at as a set of data points.
We're almost turning that model on its head and saying, this is your data, it's for your benefit.
That's you, what you
it's a real passionate side of what we're looking to do.
And where did that idea come to you from?
I've had it in my head for a while, about 5 or 6 years. I just thought, there must be a better way or other ways you can use this data, because there's such a huge growing data trail that we all throw off every day, every week, every month. Yeah.
Why did it take you so long, Nigel?
It's hard work to get something like this.
I'm not sure, but it's kind of readiness in the market. You know, my view is that there's a pushback against the Facebooks of the world.
Yeah.
But that pushback has come because people are aware of how much data they're leaving in their exhaust, or their digital self, or their footprint. And the time is for companies like us to go, you know what, it's your data, and actually there are clues and indicators in here that could help you, not Amazon sell you another pair of trainers or Facebook push another ad. It can help you find yourself again, really.
Make your life better.
Well, yeah, make you better, make your life better, make, as importantly, make those around you lives better as well. And I think one interesting thing for me is how we'll see some potentially some generational differences in how engaged people will be with this. Because like you were talking about staff surveys, a lot of people have grown up. I mean, I did 20 years of filling out staff surveys knowing that it wasn't really going to make a blind bit of difference. But now younger generations are like, they're taking control. They're going, no, actually, this is a completely equal engagement between themselves and their employer. You're lucky to have me, whereas when I was young, it was, I'm lucky to have a job, you know? And it's kind of that mindset and that change is kind of what we're tapping into.
So interesting there that Dave was saying that it was only now that the market was ready for this product. So it feeds in, doesn't it, to one of the themes of the evening about looking after your staff and keeping your staff happy and stopping your staff leaving, and how tech can actually help with that, and taking control of that data can help with that. And ultimately, you have to look after your people if you want to be a success. And we've heard that from a lot of people.
Yeah. And actually, what I found interesting about this particular initiative was it was not just about the company who needs to look after their staff. It's you who needs to look after yourself, because you were in charge of this information. So it was about you making sure that you were doing the right thing for you. I think sometimes people do forget, and you need that help.
Yeah, we check an app for everything else, so why not check an app to remind yourself to think about how you're feeling and how you're coping?
Yeah, 10 minutes of mindfulness.
Makes a lot of sense.
And then finally, we did our little wrap-up with Dan Pritchard, who we call the head honcho. Not sure how he's going to feel about that, but he had a few highlights of the evening. So let's have a listen to that.
Finally, after, for most people here, 3 hours, but for you, weeks, if not months, of planning and thinking, Dan Pritchard, co-founder of Tech Southwest, is with us. How's it gone?
I think it's gone rather well. I keep getting hugged by people, so that's a good sign.
That is a good sign.
And I slightly delayed to get to the interview because people kept offering to buy me a drink. So, no, it's great. Tech Southwest was one to celebrate, one to showcase, and that's happened. And it's all because of the power of community. That's how it's worked, because the steering group is all the tech clusters. It's various companies from the size of BT through to kind of, you know, smaller organisations. And it felt sort of warm and genuine in the room. It was like, let's celebrate our successes. You know, how do you join the dots across a region? You kind of find out what's going on, and awards are just a fantastic way of doing just that.
Certainly for us, there were a few occasions tonight when we were speaking to people and we just almost stopped and looked at each other and went, whoa, that's happening here. I think, for example, of University of Plymouth Soil Project and People Matters in Bournemouth and PyroCore in Bristol. Well, do you still get moments?
Yeah, like actually, you know, from the judging when we started, you know, seeing this interest coming in and actually, you know, pouring over all those amazing entries, because the winners are just a slice of the shortlist, just a slice of this bigger pie that is the tech community across the Southwest. You know, so Ultraleap, an incredible story. Open Bionics, an incredible story. TDK Lambda, an incredible story. You know, the tech leadership, the tech entrepreneur, just incredible people and organisations doing great things, social enterprises, charities, private sector, public sector. And it's happening across the Southwest. And I think we're quietly excited about this tech community and this tech sector and what is happening. And Bristol is one of those cities that's leading the way. But you look what is happening across the region, you know, Truro, Plymouth, Somerset, Devon, Exeter, all those other areas across that whole kind of peninsula. We stick out a bit. We are a bit different. We're on the edge of things, but digital and tech is tearing that up, because it doesn't matter. You know, you've got global customers. You can be anywhere. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that we're talking a lot to individuals. There were two individuals that we spoke to today. Was it Steve Amore and
Alex Rowland? Yeah,
Alex Rowland.
You're IT now.
They were both pretty impressive, because they were doing things for their community and off their own bat, which was another lovely thing to be able to give them awards.
Yeah, and they got some of the biggest cheers of the night. Alex Rowland didn't know about the program, didn't know the project, discovered it at the judging. It's like, you know, wow, amazing. What great things they're doing. And there were a few moments like that, because we are a big sort of geographical region. So you find these little nuggets of amazing things that are going on and connecting.
When you think of tech, though, you always think companies. And actually, I was just impressed that they were just individuals. And
who are using technology to get on and do things that mattered to them, and not seeing it as a barrier, but taking what was there already and making it work for people and empowering people in a way they maybe couldn't do otherwise.
What were your highlights of tonight?
Well, apart from Toby's suits, which come across so well on podcasts, but, you know,
we tried to do some
several costume changes, you know, and I was witness to some of those backstage shenanigans, and
he
narrowed it down to 8 shirts at one point, so that was quite impressive. Now, highlights, I suppose. Well, big thank you to Ed Probert of Wired West, which is an organisation that set up in 2003, very much like Tech Southwest, and they were kind of forerunners in this, and they gave us an initial bit of funding to, you know, for Tech Southwest, our first kind of donation, and that was fantastic to have Ed up on stage presenting the award. And just seeing the mix, you know, I think we've got a real mix of shape and size type organisations across the whole region. Want to really represent the whole tech community across the Southwest. I hope people feel that we managed to achieve that in a sort of friendly way. Okay, it wasn't super, super sleek every second, you know, but that's part of the fun. We had, you know, Toby and Vicky up there, Tech Nation and Software Cornwall, Tech Southwest, you know, they're part of our tech community and they were running the show, and that's good, and that created a good
people
vibe.
People like that, actually. Some people at our table said what they really liked was the fact that you didn't make people get their own tables. So people were just sitting with randoms, and then you had to talk, and you had to become friends, and you had to collaborate, and that was what was really nice about the event as well.
Yeah, it was cozy. It was warm. It was pretty warm in there. But no, it was great.
We were crammed in.
Yeah.
So I think just finally for me, of course, what something like tonight does do is it raises expectations, doesn't it? And people have gone, well, they can do that. So like Glastonbury.
Thanks, Robert. So like, you know, I'm here with my pint in my hand. The show's just 20 minutes backstage with Tribe 10.
What's next?
And you know, so you're pushing forward already.
Well, we know the planning for Glastonbury starts the minute that the stage comes down.
Okay.
So what next? Where
I think
next?
What next is we will ask the members. You know, do we move around the region? Should we go to Cornwall? Should we go to Bristol? Should we keep it in the middle? So, you know, because there's long journeys home across this lovely big region of ours. did we get it right? Right kind of categories, those kind of things. But whatever we do, we just don't want to lose that community feel. We can't lose that community feel. That's the most important thing. You know, the judges were from across the region and we had, you know, lots of people involved in the judging. All the sponsors were either regional representatives of national organizations, but 99% of them were regional based, you know, local companies saying, yes, I've heard about the awards, I want to support, how can I get involved and help you? That's amazing. So whatever it is, watch this space, ideas welcome, ideas on a postcard, Tech Southwest, but we've got to obtain that magic, you know, that magic community feel.
A Tech Southwest podcast in collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting Tech SW Official.